is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Yes, it is, friends. It is Carlin, just that, on 98.7 ESPN. It is on Twitter as well, at Chris Carlin, at C-H-R-I-S-C-A-R-L-I-N. I can't believe I'm going to say this. It wasn't all his fault this time. We've got 2 hours with you. We've tried something new tonight. We, of course, are always available on smart speakers at Play 98.7 ESPN, of course, on the ESPN app at ESPNNewYork.com, and now video streaming the show as well on YouTube, on Twitch, on Twitter, and also on Facebook. All of my pages over there, we've got a live video stream going as well. 800-919-3776. We're taking a crack at that because obviously you'd need to see more of me. It's really more of a visual thing, isn't it? I can't believe I'm going to say this, but it's really accurate. I know how much has been made of the Jets offense in the second half of yesterday's game. It was non-existent. After Adam Gase actually abdicates the throne a little bit in giving up calling plays for the first time in what he said had to be 8 or 9 years. 8 or 9 years since he had not called plays in a game. He's standing around, almost looked like he was bored at times. He turns it over to Dowell Loggins, and that's great. I give him credit for doing that. And the offense in the first half looked alive. Frank Gore looked alive. Denzel Mims looked fantastic. Sam Darnold, at times, up until, you know, the very end of the half, looked pretty good. There were encouraging signs. So you're starting to think, maybe just changing it up gives them a little bit of a, I don't want to say spark, but more of, just a different look. And everybody was kind of excited about it. And you could try to, you know, get a little extra something in your step if you wanted to. Okay. Seemed like the Jets had that in the first half offensively. Second half, they had 4 yards. Now, that's not good. I'm not any specialist when it comes to offense. I'm certainly no offensive genius. But I can tell you that 4 yards of total offense, that's not good. So when I look at the numbers and I realize that the Jets had only 2 first downs in the second half, boy, that strikes me as a major problem. But it's not all the fault of the offense, even though it was as bad as it was. You know how many first downs the Buffalo Bills had in the second half of that game? 13. 13 first downs to 2 in the second half of the game, and they had the football for 24 minutes in the second half. Now, you can say, if you want, that the defense was tired. But don't you have to get off the field at some point? This, my point, is a team effort. This was by no stretch simply on the offense, which was god-awful, which has to produce, which obviously has to score points. But the defense, even though they were only giving up field goals, I mean, they couldn't get off the field either. 2 first downs for the Jets in the second half, I believe. It was 22 offensive plays in the second half. That's not much. And it helps when you get the ball back a little bit more, but it also helps when you execute better. So the one thing that we learned yesterday is while Adam Gase is not the man for the future of this team, at the very least, he was willing to try anything to try to go win a football game. For me, he had looked so many times this season like he had just given up, like he was trying to get fired, like he knows what the inevitable is. And yesterday, the fact that he'll give up the play calling, all right, maybe it looks good. Maybe it makes it look good. But at least you have to give him credit for looking like he's trying. But don't for a minute excuse what this is. It's not just a bad offensive team. It's a bad football team all the way around, and a lot of people were a big part of that loss yesterday. At some point, you have to get off the field in the second half. So I'm not absolving the offense of any wrongdoing. 4 yards is pathetic. 2 first downs is pathetic. 10 points is not good. And your defense actually gave you enough of a chance by limiting the Bills to as many field goals as they did. But you also have to get off the field and give your offense the ball a little bit more. It's just a big combined effort. And now that the Jets have, frankly, turned over the offensive play calling to Patton Oswalt, I think it's fantastic. Oh, my God, Dowell Loggins looks exactly like Patton Oswalt. Does he not? And I know this is something that has been brought up before, but, boy, when you saw it even more through the course of the game, it's really true. But I give Gase credit, and I know that's not a popular thing to do. Give him credit for being willing to adjust. Now, he should have been willing to adjust for the first year plus of his tenure here. Gase's biggest problem has always been making it more about the system than making it about the players. And yes, he got a player back yesterday. He got two back, in fact. He got three back, in fact. His actual starting quarterback, his actual starting left tackle, who is a beast, and his actual potential top wide receiver. I mean, you have to admit, Mims at least looked the part in the first game of his career. So while I'm not saying in any way that this is going to save his job, which was suggested more than once during the broadcast, I could not get over that. I am saying that can we at least just acknowledge that everybody has played a role in this being a bad football team. At least at some point, albeit entirely too late, Gase was willing to try anything. Can you just a hair, just a little bit of credit for that? A little bit of credit, that's all. Nobody has any answers right now. So why did he give up the play calling? Let's hear from Gase himself after the game yesterday.
Been thinking about it for a while, just trying to figure out, you know, what's going on, how come we're not consistent, productive, you know, all the situations you're looking through every week, and just felt like it was, you know, it was the time to do it and just kind of see how our guys would respond and see what our offensive staff could put together. And it looked like things were going well, you know, in the first half. My big thing was it allowed me to take a step back and just really focus on every phase of our organization.
It was a bit odd to not see him with the red pen making notes with his head down all the time. Didn't that feel weird? Look, he's looking at the entire game. Wow, what a concept. But nonetheless, he's not going to turn into a sympathetic figure anytime soon, but I at least want to give him the old pat on the back and say, you're giving it a good old college try, big fella. Thanks for that. Even though, as it was once famously said, the ship be sinking. And this ship, well, Sully couldn't save this plane. It's in the bottom of the Hudson right now, the way things have gone for the Jets this season.
Sully, Sully, dance for me, dance for me, dance for me, oh, oh. I never seen anybody do the things you do before. They say, move for me, move for me, move for me, hey, hey.
Yes, it's Carlin at 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776. Open lines, let's get to them. As we start right now with Calvin in the Bronx, you are up first. Calvin, what's cooking?
think that the Jets on offense, they are too predictable. Other teams know exactly what they're going to do. They need a wide range of play. The second thing is that they don't have a good...
Well, but they weren't predictable in the first half. They were productive in the first half.
I agree with you 100%. However, I'm talking about overall. Yesterday, they were different. But the second half, it seemed to go back to that prediction of other people, other teams knew what they were doing. And also the general, the front office. Who are they drafting? I mean, we get players.
They drafted Mekhi Becton and Denzel Mims this year in the first two rounds. Now, Mims has been hurt, but at least yesterday he looked good. And Becton, while hurt a little bit, has looked fantastic. You know, we're talking about the front office. You're talking about the front office of the past 5 and 6 years, which was the last guy. And that was Mike Maccagnan, and he's gone.
Yeah. I think that we definitely need the scouting to really look at this, because we don't get the best players. We get players that when they go to other teams, they still don't make it. They, you know, we had in the past, we had Sanchez. He was a bench person. It just shows that we don't want to spend the money.
No, I don't think it's not spending the money, and thanks for the call. That's not what we're dealing with here. I think we're dealing more with bad drafts, as you pointed out in years past. I mean, you look at the Maccagnan drafts overall, outside of Jamal Adams, there is not much to feel good about. There really is not. And frankly, it's more than fair to criticize them for where they are right now with not being able to develop players. There have been a few guys that have gone other places and excelled. Demario Davis became an excellent player toward the very end of his Jet tenure the first time around, and really developed when he went elsewhere, when he went to the Saints. Now, I look at the other players that they've brought in. They haven't done a good job in free agency, but they've spent money. They spent a fortune on Trumaine Johnson. That was a disaster. Now, that might have been a Todd Bowles want that Maccagnan went and did, but look at what they did last year. When you have Maccagnan spending money on players that the coach didn't want, you can get on Gase all you want, but you can't have guys not on the same page. Now, Gase had not coached a game yet. Did he deserve to have that kind of authority? No. But you can't go and sign a guy when you know the coach wants no part of him with Le'Veon Bell. You can't do it. You can't do it. You went and spent an absolute fortune on C.J. Mosley, who is the best middle linebacker in the game and has played almost a complete game for the Jets. Almost. Lonnie, Long Island, next, 98.7 ESPN. Lonnie, what do you got?
Oh, how are you doing, Carl? The Jets, they disappoint me so bad. I just want to say, you know, the Jets, 40 years, they just don't get it right. They haven't been good. They haven't had a good defense since Bart Scott and those guys were there. But to make a long story short, I'm going to tell you, Adam Gase, I don't know why he's still there. The Jets, they ruined their quarterback that could have been decent by having Gase there. Miami got rid of this guy. Why would you bring him in here? But my thing is, Sam Darnold's done. Hate to say it, we need to lose every game, which we're going to do anyway. And I could help them build a team. You got to build that line, the offensive line and defensive line. You start there. You draft Trevor Lawrence. You don't ruin this. You don't ruin him. You can't. He's the real deal.
Well, they're starting to build that offensive line. They're starting to do that with Joe Douglas.
Yes.
You know, he went out.
You need both sides of the ball. They haven't had.
Of course they do.
Rusher.
in 10 years.
I don't disagree with that either. Of course they need pass rushers. They need all of the above when it comes to the entire roster. They're going to have an absolute fortune to spend this offseason, and they are going to have a ton of draft picks courtesy of the Jamal Adams trade and these other minor moves that they are making. So far, the Willis trade moves like that. They may trade Avery Williamson here soon to try to add another late-round pick.
I'm sorry to cut you off. Can I just say one thing before I go?
Go.
Before you... Okay.
Say it.
The Jets, they could have all the draft picks they want. If they don't have the right people picking the right people, then it's just a waste of time going back where we're going. I mean, Trevor Lawrence, if you can't miss on him, he's the real deal. Sam Darnold would have been a decent quarterback. Not as good as Trevor Lawrence, but he would have been decent if Gase didn't get all of him and mess him up. Now, the poor kid is, he don't know what he's doing. I feel sorry for him.
Well, let's talk about that, and thanks for the call. Thank you for the call. Here's where we are with this. I'm watching him yesterday, and the color announcer for the game for CBS is Rich Gannon. Now, if you pay attention, you know that there are very few guys, a couple here and there, who are on par with Rich Gannon when it comes to evaluating a quarterback. He is superb at it. Absolutely superb. And I love when Gannon gets a game with a quarterback that you have questions about. Because that's what we had yesterday with Darnold. He is very honest about what's going on. So in the first half, Gannon's word to me, when looking at quarterbacks and developing them, is gold. Absolute gold. So, in the first half yesterday, he's talking about how Darnold's feet look good, he's moving around, he's setting his feet well, he's making some good throws, and then he'll see him take a sack. And then he'll talk about why it was Darnold's fault, even though you can look at it and say, well, he never really had a chance. The things that Sam still does are things like not recognizing where the blitz might be coming from and adjusting the protections at the line of scrimmage accordingly. Like, that's an absolute killer. And whether it's him or they had one blitz where Ryan Griffin could have picked up the blitzer or just chipped him or P. Ryan was in the wrong place, it has to be cleared up by the quarterback at the line of scrimmage. Then the interception at the end of the first half, he's looking at that and he says, I don't know what that was. That was bad football. That was a bad decision. And you can just look at it and see. And you can also hear him talk about the receivers that he's missing. And not missing in terms of throws, missing in terms of vision. Sam's not seeing some guys who are open, and he's taking a long time to throw the football. These are all problematic issues that don't necessarily have to do with the fact that he doesn't have a great group around him. I listened to Rich Gannon yesterday, who tried to give Sam Darnold every fair shake that he could. And understood the situation that he was in. And yes, there are times where he doesn't stand a chance. But there are times when Sam takes sacks that he doesn't need to take. And they're not even the ones where you're running around trying to make a play happen. They're ones that you could recognize at the line of scrimmage and change the protections and buy yourself a little extra time. Those are the kind of mistakes that you can't afford. And that's why, to me, I'm more convinced than ever that there should not be, if they have the number one pick, any question as to what they're doing with it. As Dave Gettleman would say, I am in full bloom love with Trevor Lawrence. Full bloom love with Trevor Lawrence. Gannon is about as good as it gets. And I heard everything I needed to hear yesterday that really showed me that Sam's not the guy for the long term. Sam may turn out to be a decent quarterback in this league. Sam may turn out to be Ryan Tannehill Let me ask you a question. If Sam Darnold turns out to be Ryan Tannehill, was that worth passing up on a guy that most people feel like will be a Hall of Fame quarterback?
Shower you with all my attention. Yeah, these are my only intentions. Stay in the kitchen cooking up, got your own bread. Heart full of equity.
Some of those decisions by Sam in the first half, I mean, I could not get over. I couldn't get over the interception at the end of the half. I mean, that was just staggeringly bad. And you don't think twice about this. The main idea that we have discussed all season long is simply this. If you don't know by now what the deal is with Sam, you do. You do know. You just don't want to admit it to yourself yet. 800-919-3776. Spike in Jersey is next. Spike, what's going on, brother?
Well, I got to welcome back the big fella from a very, very successful trip to East Lansing.
And yes, my friend. Yes, a very successful trip to East Lansing.
Boy, were you pumped on that call. I enjoyed every second of it. Now, listen, here's my thing on Sam Darnold. I'm in your camp. I'm going to give you an analogy, and with all your intelligence, let me see if you approve it or not. I think, from what I've observed, pretty much seen every snap Sam has taken, Sam Darnold to Trevor Lawrence is Bobby Bacala to Corrado Soprano Jr.
So you're calling Trevor Lawrence Uncle June?
Yep.
I mean, it's not exactly the, what's the word I was looking for? Metaphor that I would use. It's not even a metaphor, analogy, whatever it is.
It's an analogy. I just see Trevor Lawrence being the prototypical guy with the size and the arm. I know he's playing for the best team on the planet. So be it. You can crap up doing that, too, and you agree. But Sam is lacking something. I'm sure someone listening will come up with this. I know we could both look it up on our phones or laptops or tablets. Has there ever been a quarterback that's played a second half and had 4 yards and what was time of possession? 5 minutes?
The second half of the game, the Jets had the football for 6 minutes.
Oh, six? Oh, yeah. Forget my theory.
They did get 2 first downs, Spike. Let's be fair. 2.
Well, you got to go. Someone will come up with it. I have a few ideas who may call in and come up with it. But if there's someone who, if the team has had the ball for 6 minutes and 4 yards for a fewer amount of times than that, and well, maybe a team if you know, those, what do they call those, tomato cans that Georgetown used to play, what was it, Saint something, I forget, Saint Leo's. And there's one in football, too, that they put on the schedule. So Savannah State against Alabama. Maybe one of those, but it can't be much worse. He was so bad decision-making. And you know what bothers me, Chris? And again, all kidding aside, great to have you back. It really bothers me that he's gotten worse in the last 2 years. He played better under Todd Bowles.
It's hard to argue against that, and thanks for the call, Spike. It really is. It's very hard to argue that he didn't play better that first year. You can talk about what he hasn't had all you want. The word regression is very real and very fair. Very fair. Sam Darnold has regressed as a member of the Jets. The last 2 seasons, he has regressed. And if you want to admit that, fine. If you don't, I totally get that too. I totally get that. But it's just fact. Michael is in Clifton. He's next on 98.7 ESPN. Michael.
Chris, what's going on?
How are you, bud?
Oh, you know, I couldn't really agree with you more with the regression in Sam Darnold. And, you know, it kills me because, you know, coming out of college, I thought, wow, you know, maybe for the first time the Jets were going to have a little something behind them. Uh-huh. And watching him now, it's just, you know, like you said, you can blame everything you want on not having anything behind him. But now listening to everyone talk about, you know, Trevor Lawrence coming in, yes, he's going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback, and yes, he's going to be amazing. But how much more is he going to be able to do with the offense that he has given right now?
But let me ask you this question. Do you not think the talent is going to get better around the next couple of years?
Well, if we're taking our first draft pick and we're taking it and we're putting it all on Trevor Lawrence, I mean,
how many? You have another first-round pick next year. You have another third-round pick next year. And you have another first-round pick the year after. You got two first-round picks the year after.
Yeah, but every year we have the same amount of – we have the same kind of picks. But every year, if you like
– listen – Michael, you can decide if you want to right now to not have faith in Joe Douglas as a GM because of every GM the Jets have ever had and how that none of them have gotten it done. I understand the pain that has been inflicted upon your heart that you would never want to believe in anybody else again. I get that, but I'm telling you this time, this is real, and it's going to happen, and this guy is the guy. I believe that 100% based on what I've seen before. I might be wrong, but I am looking at this more from a logical standpoint and not an emotional standpoint. Granted, I'm not a Jets fan, so I understand that.
Well, yeah, they're there. Yeah, there you have it. I mean, you know, I don't want to, you know, I love the Jets. I've loved them my entire life. I have a 9-year-old son. I told my 9-year-old son, I said, listen, after last season, I said, you have free will to root for and decide what football team you want to root for the rest of your life.
You handed the kid a get-out-of-jail-free card. That's what you did.
I literally was brought into this by my family, and I don't want to watch my son suffer and have to go through
You know what that is? That's parental love. That's love.
And, hey, you know. I wish it did.
Bravo, Michael. Thank you for the call. Bravo. I you know, so many parents do not present that option to their children. They almost, and I hate to put it this way, but it's true. They almost want their children to experience that same pain that they have. Now, there's a lot of character that's built in rooting for a losing team. But I get it. And if I was a father, I would make my kid root for a team that was not a perennial winner. Because I would want them to, first of all, when the victory actually does come, savor it more. And secondly, I want them to learn that life isn't easy. And there are lessons that can be learned through sports fans. However, from a Jet perspective, if you are a Jet parent and your son or daughter has bought in early and they've done it because of following you, you can give them that get out of jail, Jet jail free card. You can do that. And you're doing it in good conscience. You're doing it for the right reasons. They may not understand it if you're giving it to them at 5 and 6 and 7 years old. You have to wait until they're 10, 11, 12, till when they really understand what they're in for. You have to wait. James, he is next on Long Island. James, what's going on?
What's going on, Carl? And I wanted to call in today after yesterday's game to say that I think Douglas is in a good position here, whether what he wants to do with Darnold, since I think that we all know that at this point it's all Lawrence. But I think that that Douglas is in a good position to get a draft pick for Darnold because there's so many teams out there, especially look with the Cowboys, the Jaguars. There's a lot of teams out there that need a quarterback, so I think Darnold could be an easy trade target to one of those teams. And I think he'll succeed because I really don't think the Jets' failures have been on Darnold at all.
I think some of them have been. I think if you want to absolve him, you are being a little naive and wanting so badly for this to be the guy. But I won't disagree about what he doesn't have. My problem is I don't want to talk about what he doesn't have. I want to talk about what he can do to make what he has better.
And I think also he'll strive better in a better system than the Jets, like with a team. Like, I think he'll do well. I think he would do well with Dallas. I think he would do well.
Like I said, he may go somewhere else, James, and thanks for the call. He may go somewhere else and turn into Ryan Tannehill. That's fine. If you get Trevor Lawrence and he's the superstar that everybody projects him to be, and the Hall of Fame quarterback that I think a lot of people are going to project him to be. Granted, he hasn't taken a snap in a league. I know that. But there hasn't been this much buzz around a quarterback at the top of the draft since Andrew Luck. There hasn't been. And Luck was on that trajectory until the injuries just started killing him the last few years. That may happen with Lawrence. All I'm saying is the talent and the belief from the evaluators, it's all there. Couple of tweets. Let's get him in at Chris Carlin over on Twitter. Mark Pelotowski. Chris Carlin just said Lawrence is a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback. He hasn't played a snap in the league. Yes, I said he has the chance to be that level of quarterback, as do, pretty much every other expert who evaluates quarterbacks. But, okay, that's fine. I went out on a limb. Real Jets fans tweets, the Jets had 4 yards and 2 first downs. That kind of tells you why the Bills had the ball for 24 minutes in the second half. No? Yes. But my point is, they couldn't get off the field either. The Bills had 13 first downs. The Jets had 2. The Jets offense, that was pathetic in the second half. Pathetic. The Jets defense was not good in terms of getting the ball back. They just weren't. And you could make the argument, well, they were out there too much. Okay, but what I know is that when they were out there, they weren't stopping anybody in the second half. That's just fact. So that's, you can't ignore that. Rich McLeod, in reference to Greg Williams bearing some responsibility here and not being a defensive genius as he believes he is, Williams clearly isn't, but he also isn't the head coach. You're right. But in some ways he thinks he is. And Greg Williams, for as many good things as he could bring to a team, he doubles up on the bad things. Carlin, 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. Let's hit Harry in New Jersey next. Harry, what's up, buddy? You're up on Carlin. What do you got?
Hey, Chris, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
So I just wanted to talk about the Jet game. I saw a few problems with Sam Darnold. I'm really not that down on him yet. The thing is, I just think the O-line doesn't give him any time. This guy's getting hurried like crazy. He's just getting nervous and throwing a lot of picks.
Yeah, look, I think the problem is absolutely in the offensive line. There's no getting around that. But I think there are sacks, as we heard from Rich Gannon yesterday, even when they're coming pretty quickly, that Darnold is not recognizing where the blitz is coming from. If you noticed in the second half, the Bills blitzed an awful lot and the Jets never adjusted. And that's a big part of why they only had 2 first downs and 4 yards in the second half. So when you don't recognize that at the line of scrimmage and adjust accordingly, or somebody misses an assignment, there were guys that were turned free that should never be turned free to get to the quarterback.
Right. They were really just running straight into him. And also with that point, I think that Darnold also, you know, needs to learn how to get rid of the ball faster. Even when the O-line does have him pretty safe, he's just holding on to the ball for way too long. Now, I know he doesn't have many weapons, but I don't know if that's just him not getting the ball out.
No, that's true. He is absolutely holding on to it way too long, and thanks for the call. And you want to know what was the most damning thing? The most damning thing that Rich Gannon said yesterday. He doesn't seem to have any feel for the pass rush. In other words, he does not feel when that rush is coming from behind. He has not developed that. Don't you think that in the first couple of years, he would have been able to develop that with as much pressure as he has been under? He doesn't have a feel for where the rush is coming from. Ouch. Ouch. You can't be a quarterback and have that be the case. Mike is next in Jersey. Mike, what do you got?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You know, my beloved Jets could be the worst team in the history of the NFL. I mean, 4 yards in the second half. How is that even possible?
It'd be possible. Go ahead.
You know, this right now, it's really looking like it's a total rip it down and build it up. Keep Becton, keep Perrin,
What the hell did you think it was? Did you think this was a team that was contending this year?
Well, let me ask you a question. Joe Douglas, Rex Hogan, and Phil Savage, didn't they try and put a team together that can be competitive, or they were just telling us something different?
They put a team together that was competitive within reason, but they weren't going to go out and spend a fortune that was going to really hamper them for when they were ready to go do some damage in free agency. They weren't going to do anything this year that was going to put them behind the eight ball in the future. And that's why, you know, they tried to get the premier tackle on the market in Jack Conklin. He went to Cleveland, okay? Once he went to Cleveland, they were not going to go and pull a Dave Gettleman and overpay on a Nate Solder type of player. Wouldn't you agree that's probably a smart thing?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah, so they went out and brought in other guys, and thanks for the call, that they felt like we're going to be able to help them. And they felt like we're going to be able to contribute and just make the offensive line better. Not necessarily stars, but make the line better. Now, has it been better? Hard to say that it has. You know, Becton is the brightest spot of the season thus far. Mims could continue to be a bright spot for the Jets. That was a bright spot yesterday. But the rest of the offensive line has just not played all that well. They just haven't. And he went out and did spend some money to try to get it better. George Fant, I mean, good run blocker yesterday. They were able to run the ball well in the first half, but is he blowing the doors off of anybody? No, like he to me is a fifth or sixth offensive lineman, and he's your starting right tackle. You know, they didn't back up the truck to bring him in, but him and McGovern and bringing back Alex Lewis, you know, they did bring some guys in that they thought were going to be better. Lewis was hurt yesterday, and they just haven't been. Carlin, 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776. Open lines, let us go. I just saw this come over. And I know this is from earlier this morning, but I just saw it for the first time on Twitter. From Bill de Blasio, who, you know, if he screws up this Met sale, let's run this clown out of town, honestly. Here's what de Blasio commented earlier today on the potential sale of the Mets to Steve Cohen. This is something our law department is evaluating. We're going to get a resolution on this very quickly because the land at Citi Field belongs to is on city belongs the, because the land that Citi Field is on belongs to the city. The city always has a role when there is an ownership change. There is a process for doing that. The law department doing its due diligence right now. I'll be getting a report from them soon. It's based on the facts, and I will respond quickly. Okay. Let's get your quick resolution, Bill. Don't get in the way. Rubber stamp it. Let's move on. Andy Martino of SNY reported earlier today that Steve Cohen has the votes. The vote is expected to take place sometime on Thursday. Jeff Wilpon today had a Zoom call with many members of the Mets organization. I think all Met employees who could be on it were on it. And it basically was, from what I've heard, a goodbye. A long discussion of the highs and the lows, the regrets of not winning more. I'm sure the word Madoff did not come up, but that's just what it is. And there was every indication that this was his way of saying goodbye to the people that have worked for him with the Mets for this long. Now, as we know, they are still going to own 5% of the team. When you look back at the Wilpon era, there are not going to be fond memories. There are going to be, unfortunately for them, memories of screw-ups of the last 10 years. That's really going to be the lasting memory, the last 10, 11 years, whatever it's been, since the Madoff disaster, since opening Citi Field, since owing so much money on Citi Field, owing money on SNY, which apparently is somewhere in the neighborhood of $800 million that the team owes in debt on SNY that they've borrowed against. And it's going to be primarily thought about money and PR gaffes over the years that have really killed them. I in no way am going to try to sugarcoat that whatsoever. It has not been a good run. You would not at the end of this say, hell of a run. No, you wouldn't. You would not. And that's unfortunate. I've said this many, many times. I like Fred a lot. Fred has been personally instrumental in my career. You would never look at me and think I was a television guy by any stretch of the imagination. But as I learned in at the end of 2008, it was a 2 or 3 years into SNY's existence that, you know, they offered me a job doing the pre and post game. And I was like, okay, why? Because I'd never done any television before. And Fred was a guy that pushed for me, because he liked the idea of having somebody that looked like the everyman on his network. And so with that, I personally owe him a lot. Even, you know, we didn't have any kind of a close relationship by any stretch. We didn't speak very often. Whenever I saw him, it was always great. And he was great to me and was, as I said, you know, a big part of why I got that opportunity to be there for 8.5 years. And it was an absolute blast to work there. So that's just on the personal level. On the ownership level, to me, the biggest thing that ever went wrong was to have Jeff be involved in it. It's just that simple. And to take such a major role on the baseball side. If it's going to be a major role on the business side and you learn the business coming up that way, fine. Jeff is never a baseball guy. You know, he played baseball, but so did I. And I'm not sitting here telling you I could run a baseball team. And I feel like that so much of what has gone wrong with the team on the field over the last 15 years, 12 years or so, has been based around the presence of Jeff having a large say in what goes on with the team. And the finances were obviously a big part of it too. But I can never say that they were not owners that did not want to win or that were only in it for the money in terms of wanting to turn as big of a profit. Everybody gets in it for that. Every business, every owner in Major League Baseball is in it to make money. But they wanted to win. They were baseball fans. We know that about Fred. We know that about Jeff. They were baseball fans. They wanted to win. But there were a lot of mistakes made along the way. And fans are just understandably going to have that mentality of get out and we'll see you later and it's been enough. And we haven't spent any money in a long enough time, and that has to be something that's going to bug them for a long time, the fans. I look at this as just such an incredible missed opportunity for a very long time. And it was because of two reasons. Number one was Madoff, but obviously that money came back. You have to remember that. Like, they were able to claw that money back, and then they had to give some of it up. But all in all, they did not get hammered in that deal. Where they really had the biggest problem was the stadium, was the need to build that new Ebbets Field and the need to build the new, you know, to have Citi Field be this jewel. And I get it. Everybody builds a new stadium, but financially it was crushing to them. The amount of money that they owed on the stadium, continue to owe on the stadium. They had to borrow from SNY. They had to borrow from baseball at one point. A lot of it had to do with that. Citi Field's beautiful. It's a great place to watch a game. I would much rather go there to watch a game than Yankee Stadium for me, frankly. I think it has more to it. Yankee Stadium, the new Yankee Stadium, can really feel soulless to a degree. Citi Field has more of a feel to it, but they never made it enough about the Mets at the beginning. It was too much about the Dodgers leaving Brooklyn, and I get it. Just down to the design, it looked like Ebbets Field. That should have been enough. They needed to make it about the history of the New York Mets, because even though there were only two world championships in their history, there was enough history there that the fans loved. That was a cardinal mistake that they made from the beginning. And then just, you know, the way things went with the team. There were times where they did go out and spend, and you have to remember that, you know, that they went out and pushed, and they went out, and yeah, they had to be encouraged to go get Piazza. They did it. They re-signed him. They had to be encouraged to go out and make a trade to go get Mike Hampton, and they, you know, made it to the World Series in 2000. They had to be, was Hampton 99 or 2000? I can't remember. But point is that they got somewhere. They got there in 2015 on a great run. And I'm sure for them, there will be a lot of memories and a lot of personal relationships that they will cherish from people that worked for them. But you also have to understand, if you're them, this was not, you're not going to be fondly remembered by the fans, unfortunately. That's just the way it is. And now it's move on and get to what you hope is a new era in Mets baseball. But I would just caution you to this. Money is not going to be the ultimate savior of this team. The ultimate savior of this team is going to be the right people making the right decisions for the organization. And they've had them before. You know, I don't think Brody Van Wagenen's that guy. I think they need to have the right people in place, the right baseball people with the healthy mix of analytics to finally get this right. It's not going to be all about spending every last dollar on every monster free agent. And I'd be surprised if Steve Cohen is going to approach it that way. I think he'll spend more money. I don't think there's any doubt. But just remember, you don't make that kind of money. $14 billion he's worth by being stupid and irresponsible. As for the Wilpons, I wish him well. Jeff was always good to me as well. I always got along well with him. When I was at SNY, I could count on him. If I had a question about something, I could call him and ask that question, and he would get back to me. But we move on. And most Met fans are justifiably feeling, don't let the door hit you in the ass. I get it. If I was a Met fan, I would feel that way too.
Then you're left in the dust, unless I stuck by you. You're a sunflower. I think your love would be too much.
800-919-3776. Just a few minutes left, as many calls as we can get in. Bob, Long Island, next, 98.7 ESPN. Bob, how are you, hey, bud?
Hi, Colin. Love the show.
Thanks, bud.
How you doing?
Good.
I just want to tell you about this de Blasio. I'm saying, I live in New York City. He's been tearing down our city the past, not to get politics with this, but now he has to ruin my team. I was such high hopes. And you
relax. It hasn't happened yet. He's just doing, he's being Bill de Blasio. That's what he's doing. Politics aside, don't screw this up for the Met fan. You'll never be able to walk into Citi Field again.
Yeah, I'm saying this thing was like, seems like it's close to being done. The owners agreed on it.
It is. Listen, it's just hopefully, and I use this word very carefully, Bob, and thanks for the call. It's a formality. Hopefully it's just a formality, because that's all it needs to be. Brian in Houston is next. Brian, what's cooking, dude?
Hey, Chris, listen, real quick. I know you're pressed for time.
Take your time. Relax.
Yes, sir. The Rays? Why was he trying to – Kershaw's on the mound. He's trying to steal – I don't understand. He's trying to steal home.
Are you talking about Margot trying to steal home?
Yes.
Here was the only thing. My wife and I were sitting and watching and talking about it, right? I know. My wife and I were sitting and watching and talking about it. The only thing I could figure is he felt like, because of Kershaw's, the way that he raises those hands up so far and so high, that it was such a slow process that he could catch him napping that way. But credit Kershaw for stepping off and doing the right thing right away.
Yes, sir. Real fast, a quiz. I meant to call in earlier. It's my first time to call. I've been listening to you. You're doing a great job.
Thank
but listen, what happened? Okay, now, if you can get this question, okay. Yankee went to the mound during, and they said, "If I'm here and you're here, doesn't it make it our time?" And the umpire was like, "You know, you gotta go." If you know what movie that's from, I love it. I hang up and listen. But
if I'm here and you're here, doesn't it make it our time? That's not a Yankee going to the mound. That's Spicoli. That's Mr. Hand.
Yes.
Of course it is, Brian. Brian, let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
You high right now?
Not yet. My wife doesn't get home till 11. So
right, there you go. Thanks, Brian, for the call. I don't encourage that. Of course. Come on. Spicoli. I've been thinking about that, Mr. Hand. If it's my time and it's your time, doesn't that make it our time? Milton and Seacliff is next, 98.7 ESPN. Milton, what up?
Hey, Chris. I don't know if I could follow up that call, but.
Well, you are. So have at it, cowboy.
Yeah, I'm trying. You know, when Stevie Cohen takes over the Mets, de Blasio, it's a formality, you know, whatever. He knows what's going on. You know, hopefully it changes the whole dynamics to the Mets. And, you know, he spends like, you know, a big league owner in the biggest city in the United States would be spending, and it changes the Mets' fortunes.
Look, but they need to get the payroll commensurate with what a New York City payroll should be, but it has to be done in a smart fashion. It cannot just be throwing this money around and trying to throw money at problems to fix it. That's the one thing I would say.
And get a catcher to start, a real catcher. You know,
problem is you can't throw. I mean, they're talking about $200 million for JT Realmuto. I love Realmuto. You can't pay him $200 million.
No, that's a lot of money. But yeah, I'm excited
that is
going.
That is a albatross contract within 2 years.
Oh yeah, but I'm excited for Stevie Cohen from the West Egg to take over the Mets. Thanks, Chris.
Appreciate it, Milton. Thanks for the call from the West Egg. Gary, Jersey, next. Gary, what's going on?
Hey, George, it's Gary.
George,
love the show.
It's Chris. Not George,
sorry,
Carlin.
I apologize. I apologize.
You know how often I get that? Are you related to George? No. If I was, I'd be funny. You know, come on.
I love you, Chris. I appreciate it. Hey, I just had a quick Jets question for you. I was listening to the K Show earlier, and he was very heated about how the Jets' talent is equal to that of the Bengals or the Chargers right now, and they have two rookie quarterbacks starting. So I wanted to get your thoughts real quick. Do you feel that the Jets' talent right now in terms of their offensive skill positions, I'm not talking about the defense, mm-hmm. but the offensive skill positions, do you feel that they are on par with what Joe Burrow has to work with, what Justin Fields has to – I mean, not Justin Fields, I'm sorry.
Justin Herbert.
Justin Herbert, yes. Do you feel like their talent is on par with them? Because I personally think that T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd.
Yeah, no, with the Bengals they're not, and they didn't have Mixon yesterday. But Mixon's a tremendous running back, and I also look at what Herbert has to work with. Herbert has better receivers to work with.
Correct. And even the running backs.
I'd have to look at
– was it Justin Jackson and
Justin Jackson and Kelly are both young guys. Their primary guy is Austin Eckler, who's hurt right now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't – their offensive line certainly look a little bit better. I mean, Herbert's playing at a great level right now.
And they're both protected better, too. Like, Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow, they – I know Joe Burrow's been running for his life a little bit, but I just feel like in terms of what Sam has, and even when Joe Flacco was in there for the Jets, these guys are running for their lives. Like I was also listening to Bart and Hahn this morning, too, and they were just like, Bart said it himself, and I agree with him, guard to guard, the Jets, they need to get rid of them. Ben Roden, Connor McGovern, Alex Lewis, they all need to go. I'm okay with Finn. I think that Mekhi Becton is going to be probably one of the best left tackles in the NFL, give a couple years. But guard to guard, the Jets need to get rid of all of those guys and start over.
You know, I don't have a problem with that idea, and thanks for the call. I think McGovern can play. I just don't think he's playing well right now. I think he's a guy that's better when he's around better players. You know what I mean? Like he looks a lot better when there is more talent around him on the line. So that's kind of how I would phrase it with him. But I don't think he's somebody that you necessarily throw away. Becton, there's nothing not to like about him. And as far as Fant, I don't know. He's okay, I guess, you know. My thanks to Jake Montgomery. My thanks to the backbone of the show. That's Nikki Hartman.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.